Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details.
Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
You may approach.
Mr. Court.
Mr. Anderson, what we just talked about.
If you said anything in your report, would refresh your recollection to see whether you said anything about someone touching Maya lightly and hurt her.
I don't recall that.
May I approach? Would refresh your recollection to take a look at this?
Just look at it for yourself.
Did you have a specific spot in this?
I was simply asking you, ma'am, if you had documented that a nurse practitioner had touched Maya lightly and she had reacted to that.
I don't recall, but I'll read through this real quick and look. I can paraphrase what I documented about the nurse practitioner's visit.
All I want to know is if you documented the same thing that Ms. Laporte documented the exact same day.
I did not read Ms. Laporte's report. I have no idea what she documented.
As we discussed.
I am asking her.
Yeah.
You're not asking what we just talked about.
Does your report... Does that refresh your recollection as to whether you documented in your report a situation where Maya was touched and pulled away?
In the paragraph that I documented with the nurse practitioners.
It's just really a yes or no.
I'm not going to read it. I described how happy they were with how Maya was doing. They stated she was a completely different person. They talked about hunting for shark teeth on the beach. Mr. Kowalski even asked them to tell one of the doctors hello. I did not document anything about anybody touching Maya's leg in this report.
Or reacting by pulling away and saying it hurts.
I don't recall documenting that or seeing that.
Now,
this is the only instance with the nurses.
You were asked about photographs. You took one photograph of Maya, and you testified you did not photograph her legs, right?
I took a photo of Maya, of her face, to upload in the state computer system. Then I took a couple of photos to be nice to Mr. Kowalski so he could take those photos home with him. I didn't specifically zoom in on Maya's leg. I took a picture of this man's little girl for him. That's what I documented and took a photo of.
Ma'am, all I'm asking you is, do you have any photographs, as asked by the jury, to document what you're saying, or film, or video, anything visual, to document the things that you're saying here?
I need you to be specific on what things I'm saying, but you want to know if I took a photo.
Maya being able to pull herself around the room. Maya's feet being straightened. Maya's ability to, I don't know, move her arms. All of the things you talked about that indicated to you that she was just fine. Where's the video? Where's the photograph?
I did not photograph her wrestling with her family and them having the visit with Mr. Kowalski. It was a family event. I was clearly there to document, which I did in very, very much detail, right down to what she ate. My notes speak for themselves. They're 100% accurate of my observations in over 7 hours with that little girl.
Move to strike is non-responsive to the basic question, Your Honor. My question was simple. It was a yes or no. Do you have photographs and video or do you not?
I do not have photos of the events that I described. That would be inappropriate.
Inappropriate?
For a family visit when they're playing together as a family?
Do you recall whether the nurse advised you that you could go to Sally Smith to get recordings from the room?
I already testified to this.
No, you really didn't.
What's
but
the legal basis for the objection?
Outside the scope, and I'm not sure where he's going, to be honest with you.
I'll overrule that one question.
Would it refresh your recollection for me to show you your report of October 24th, 2016, about that issue?
Sure. You're welcome to.
Same one.
What page is that?
It's page 2. And it's right here.
Page 3?
In the middle of the second article.
I see it.
Does that refresh your recollection?
This is what I've already stated. I've recalled it and stated it.
So you do recall now that Nurse Lindsay advised you that you could get any film or video you needed from Sally Smith?
I stated this already.
Thank you. But you have none here today. How long have you prepped to testify?
When was our deposition?
No. How long did you prep for this testimony?
Outside the scope.
No, she can answer.
I didn't keep track of the time, sir. I'm a very, very busy person and work extremely hard. This was probably the last thing on my plate.
Well, how many hours have you spent any time with the defense lawyers?
Any time? We've communicated via email on what they needed, mm-hmm. Had my deposition. I still had my deposition from before.
Ma'am, I'm just asking you in the last few days, have
yes.
you been in contact with the defense counsel?
Yes.
On how many occasions?
I don't recall.
That many?
I didn't say that many. I just specifically can't state how many times.
Okay, so it was more than one or two. Can the jury say that?
Yes, more than one or two.
Three or four?
I don't recall.
How many? Well, this was yesterday or the day before. You can't recall how many times you talked to the defense counsel about your testimony.
I cannot
right?
testify under oath exactly how many times that I've spoken to them. More than two times.
Okay. More than two times in the last 2 days.
Is that a question?
Yes. Is it true? More than two times in the last 2 days?
Yes.
Okay. And you were, I guess, critical of what? Maya for not asking for pain meds? That was part of your testimony?
I didn't say I was critical.
Well,
I did not state it was critical.
Weren't you trying to point out to the jury it was part of your conclusion about why You believe she wasn't in pain? Was it she didn't ask for pain meds?
No, I said the whole picture over 7 hours of observing this little girl and her little brother.
Again, ma'am, all I'm asking you is yes or no. Did you say that?
Judge, I object.
Folks, you're going to have to let her answer the question. If you need to move the strike, you can move the strike. Let's give everybody the courtesy of asking the complete question and hearing the complete answer.
May the witness be instructed to answer yes or no to a yes or no question, and then say whatever she wants after that.
I will ask you to actually answer the question that's asked.
Did you or did you not just tell the jury one of the things that concerned you about whether she was in pain was she did not hit the button to have pain meds sent in?
I cannot answer that as a yes or no because it's not just a yes or no question. I'm sorry.
Is it that you can't remember saying it here in front of the jury?
No, I'm saying it requires more description than just yes or no.
Well, the only question is whether in front of this jury, maybe it was for lunch, an hour ago, you said that to support your idea that Maya was not in pain.
I was not supporting an idea, sir. I was describing what I saw.
I understand, ma'am. All I'm asking you as a predicate question is whether you remember stating that before the jury here today.
Stating what?
That one of the reasons you thought that Maya may not be in pain was she didn't punch the button for the nurse to get pain meds.
The way you worded that, no, I did not say that. That's not how I said that.
Okay. Well, are you aware, then, that Maya Kowalski was getting regular doses of tramadol?
I can tell you that...
Were you aware of that?
I was aware of one time.
Okay. So you think it was only on this one time? Is that your conclusion?
I'm not here to think. I'm telling you what I saw.
Okay. And what is tramadol?
It's a pain med, like we said an hour ago.
It's an opiate pain med, is it not?
I don't know the definition of it. I couldn't tell you the contents of it. I know it's a pain medicine.
But in any event, Maya was receiving opiate pain meds during this period of time, at least once, right?
Maya received tramadol one time under my observation.
Do you know how much she took and when she took it in relationship to any of the scenes you report?
No. I can testify that the nurse came in the one time for tramadol.
And you were also concerned with Maya sitting crisscross applesauce, right?
With her saying that?
No, with you seeing that.
I observed and reported that she was sitting in an Indian-style position crossing her legs on many, many occasions.
And this proved to you what?
When Maya sat Indian style, she did not verbalize any signs of pain over and over the many times that she sat that way.
Do you have any training in physical therapy?
I would not call it training, sir.
Some?
I have been to many physical therapy appointments with patients and myself.
So you must be aware then, as two physical therapists have testified before this jury, that when a child has low back leg pain, that is the most comfortable position for them to avoid pain. Surely you know that.
Objection. Argumentative.
Sustained.
Do you know that a child with low back leg pain and leg pain often sits crisscross because that is the best way to prevent pain?
I've never heard that. Nobody informed me of that.
And finally, I think you testified that you, on her ankle bracelet, didn't see any lesions. Did you check the rest of her body to see if she had any lesions?
Sir, it's not in my job description to investigate Maya's entire body. No, I did not.
So you don't know whether she had lesions or not?
I do not.
And so should the jury take then that you put everything as 100% accurate right down to the tears in Maya's eyes?
I'm saying the jury should take into account that I spent over 7 hours with this little girl, and I documented what I saw in that time period.
And when you documented it, you got a lot of things wrong, didn't you?
When I documented it, my notes are wrong. I believe my notes are correct in what I observed.
Nothing further.
Anything further?
Just one question.
With respect to your testimony here today and any conversations you had with the defense side, were you with the defense attorney, were you asking you to come in and tell the truth and testify what you observed?
Correct.
Leading.
And is that what you did?
Overruled. She can answer.
And is that what you did today? To your best
Absolutely. 110%.
Right. Thank you, ma'am.
Any follow-up on that one question?
No, Your Honor. That's not necessary.
Members of the jury, I see we've got more questions.
Hey, and members of the jury, just as a reminder, all documents that are actually in evidence will be back with you. Those that are not in evidence will not be back. Ms. Nias, jury wants to know, were you paid to testify today?
Absolutely not.
So then we don't need to ask by whom or how much. Okay, and then that was the only question that I was actually able to ask. Defense, are there any further follow-up?
No.
This time, Your Honor.
May this witness be excused?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is she released from subpoenas, or does she still need to be under subpoena? Yes.
She's released. She may be excused.
I would leave now. Okay, let's see here. We came back in at 1:40, so we're about an hour and 20 minutes. Do you have something really short, or is...
We have two video depositions. One runs about 50 minutes, one runs about an hour 10.
So you heard that. Do you want to take a break now? Do you want to do the 50-minute one now and then take a break? You want 5 minutes now?
That's fine.
Oh, you want to do the 50-minute one? Okay, the jury is requesting to do the 50-minute deposition. Am I hearing that correctly? Okay, so tell us who you are calling, and I'll...
Which one's the shorter of the two? Hold on, Your Honor.
I'm trying to figure out which one's the 50-minute one.
Well, that's okay. I'm just trying to figure out the lights.
How much? Okay, then we will be calling Dr. Behar Posey as our next witness by video.
Yes, you may. Just make sure that that...
All right, here begins the video deposition of Behar Posey.
Would you raise your hand, please? Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you're about to give in this cause will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, Doctor, you're currently employed at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
Yes, I am.
And you worked there in the fall of 2016?
Yes, I did.
And just to orient the jury, you understand we're here to ask you questions today about the care and treatment of Maya Kowalski by Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital and yourself?
Yes.
Okay. Exhibit 3 will be plaintiffs 04069 through plaintiffs 04077. It's a 9-page physician note.
Okay.
You have that in front of you, Doctor?
Yeah. And you want to make that 3?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Doctor, in front of you is what appears to be your note from October 7th, 2016. Do you agree?
Correct.
And did you review this ahead of today's deposition?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And is this a true and accurate record of your observations from October 7, 2016?
Yes.
And it reflects your medical decision making on that October morning?
Yes.
Okay. And you're duty bound by the hospital to keep accurate, complete records, is that correct?
Yes.
And your code of ethics and duty towards the patient requires the same, is that right? I'm sorry, page 6 of 9, it's plaintiff's 4074. And on that page, about two-thirds of the way down, you see medical decision-making and then an entry for differential diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I want to spend a few minutes unpacking that entry for differential diagnosis. First, could you please explain for the jury what a differential diagnosis is?
Differential diagnosis is a list of things that you consider when you're, after getting your history and examining the patient, as to what might be going on with the patient.
Okay.
It can be a complete list. There may be things missing. It depends on whether you can think of every possible explanation or not. But usually, it's a broad list of what could be going on with the patient.
But as you just testified, you're required to keep a complete and accurate record of your thinking of that on that day. Is that correct?
Yes.
So this note would reflect your medical decision making on October 7, 2016?
Yes.
When do you conduct a differential diagnosis?
After getting a history and examining the patient.
Do you do this with all patients?
For the most part.
For any simple case, you would also do a differential diagnosis?
Yes.
So let's talk about what you listed there in your differential diagnosis. I'd like to go through each of these in turn and understand what you were thinking at that point. So the first condition you listed was withdrawal.
Correct.
Can you explain what you were thinking?
The child had received ketamine, mm-hmm. and from the history that I had obtained, it appeared more than one occasion. Mm-hmm. So the presentation of the child and the symptoms could be explained by a child going through withdrawal from ketamine.
What did you understand at that point about how much ketamine Maya had been administered?
I didn't have a good idea of the total volume that she had received in the past. All I had was the information that Dad gave me when she presented.
And do you recall what that was?
Yes, that she had been placed in a coma at some point in Mexico, receiving ketamine for a prolonged period of time, and that she had continued to receive it, I don't know how many times, and that she had just received a dose the day before presentation.
As what?
That she had just received it the day before presentation to the emergency department.
Were you made aware, or basically review the records, did you understand that other than the day prior, what the previous administration of ketamine, when that would have occurred?
No, I did not know.
Okay. You talked about dependence on ketamine. Are you talking about physical or psychological dependence?
Both.
And would you please describe the physical dependence symptoms of ketamine?
I prefer not to go into that right now because I don't have a complete information on that, so I don't want to give you the wrong information.
But you generally understood on October 7, 2016 that physical dependence was a possibility?
Yes.
From the usage of ketamine. And what source would you have gone to verify that?
I didn't need to go to a source. At that point, it was just something that I was considering.
Did you confer with anyone inside the hospital?
I spoke with anesthesia.
Who did you speak with at anesthesia?
I don't remember.
And that's not reflected in your record?
I did document that I spoke with anesthesia.
Can you please point me to where you documented that you spoke with anesthesia?
It says, I discussed the dosage with anesthesia. And at the second line from the bottom.
And withdrawal was one of those. You didn't have a strong confidence that was not the case, but you listed it because it was a possibility. Is that right?
Yes, I did.
What is RSD for the benefit of the jury?
It's reflex sympathetic dystrophy. Mm-hmm. It's known by other names, like chronic regional pain syndrome.
Okay. And why did you list that in your differential diagnosis?
That was what the father claimed that the child had.
Constipation. Why did you list that in your differential diagnosis?
The father told me that she had a history of constipation. Mm-hmm. She had just been seen in the emergency department for constipation. So it was in the list, and she was presenting with abdominal pain.
You also listed other intra-abdominal issue. Would you please explain that entry?
Well, the father told me that she had been seen in the emergency department for abdominal pain. Mm-hmm. So there are multiple other causes of abdominal pain.
Okay.
That have to be considered in any child that comes in with abdominal pain, especially when they were just in the hospital for the same reason.
So that was, again, based on the father's representation?
Yes. And the fact that the complaint was still persisting.
UTI, for the benefit of the jury, what is UTI?
Urinary tract infection.
Okay. Why did you list that?
Because that can cause abdominal pain.
Okay. That was not based on the father's representation. That was based on your medical opinion. Is that right?
It was something that you have to consider in any female with abdominal pain.
Okay. And then your last potential diagnosis there is psychogenic. Would you please explain that for the benefit of the jury?
Psychogenic is another thing that has to be considered with any child that presents with abdominal pain.
Would you elaborate on that term for the jury, please?
Psychogenic would be any kind of mental health problem that can present with signs and symptoms of abdominal pain. For example, depression, anxiety, conversion disorder. There's a whole list of these.
Sure. So you're referring to psychological conditions of Maya, the psychogenic entry there?
Psychogenic is something that you have to consider in a child that presents with abdominal pain.
Right, and when you enlisting that, you were thinking of various psychiatric diagnoses of Maya, is that correct?
I was not aware that she has any psychiatric diagnoses.
You were considering psychiatric diagnoses of Maya, is that correct?
Yes, that would be something to consider.
Okay. So next I'd like to turn to page 8 of 9 here. It's plaintiff's 04076. And on that page, a third of the way down, we see impression, diagnosis. Now, this reflects your opinion following the differential diagnosis, is that correct?
This is the working diagnosis when the child was admitted to the hospital.
So this predates your differential diagnosis?
No.
Was this impression and this diagnosis rendered after the differential diagnosis or before the differential diagnosis?
It's written after the differential diagnosis,
okay.
But it doesn't mean that that's the diagnosis.
It plainly states diagnosis reflex sympathetic dystrophy, so would you please explain to me how that's not the diagnosis?
We oftentimes in the emergency department document a diagnosis that later on turns out not to be the correct diagnosis. You have to write a diagnosis when you're admitting the patient.
Mm-hmm.
At the point when the child presented, this was all I had, and therefore that's all I could write.
Well, you'd refine your opinion based on the differential diagnosis, is that correct?
Because I could not rule all of these things in the emergency department. There is no way that I can rule all of these in or out in the emergency department.
And why not list other potential diagnoses here under your impression?
Because it wouldn't have changed anything as far as her management.
So a later provider reading this note would not understand that the diagnosis is RSD?
No, a later person that would look at this would see that that was the diagnosis that I admitted the patient with. Does not mean it's correct. It doesn't mean it's incorrect.
Okay, but it was your best opinion at the time, is that correct?
No. As I said, you cannot rule all of these diagnoses in or out in the emergency department. That was the working diagnosis that I admitted the patient with.
Who establishes the working diagnosis?
I do.
Okay. Why list RSD over one of the other five conditions that you listed under differential diagnosis?
Because I couldn't rule them in or out, and it was the diagnosis that the parents claimed that the child had when the child arrived to the emergency department.
This is the only diagnosis that you could rule in.
I couldn't rule it in. It was the working diagnosis. It's what the child presented to the hospital saying that they had.
Did she present to the hospital with constipation?
Not to my knowledge.
Did she present to the hospital with abdominal pain?
Yes, she did.
Why not list abdominal pain under the diagnosis?
I could have put that there, but I didn't.
So you rendered some sort of decision, and the outcome is reflex sympathetic dystrophy. Is that correct?
Again, it's a working diagnosis. It's not something that I could rule in or out in the emergency department.
All right. What I don't see listed here is Munchausen by proxy.
Psychogenic, I think. It's in the DSM for psychogenic.
When we just discussed this, you stated that those were psychological diagnoses of Maya that you were considering. Was that correct?
Psychogenic was one of them.
Right, and psychogenic referred to psychological diagnoses of Maya, correct?
Yes.
Right, not psychological diagnoses of Beata, is that correct?
A lot of psychogenic problems in children are caused by their parents.
Okay, so your testimony is that your psychogenic categorization there includes the potential for Munchausen by proxy.
It's in the DSM.
Okay.
For psychiatric problems.
And is that something that you were actively considering?
Yes.
When you admitted her, Munchausen by proxy?
Yes.
Okay. So upon suspecting Munchausen by proxy, you then turn to the Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital protocol for addressing suspected cases of Munchausen by proxy, is that correct?
No.
Why not?
We don't have a protocol.
You don't have a protocol?
Not in the emergency department.
The hospital doesn't have a Munchausen by proxy protocol?
We do not have a pathway or a protocol in the emergency department.
How long have you been at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital by the fall of 2016?
10 years.
All right, you previously, additionally, in 1998, gave a presentation at the first national conference on Munchausen syndrome by proxy, is that correct?
I did.
Okay, and so at that time, you were aware of the literature out there?
The literature at that time, yes.
Okay. Okay, so you did not make that diagnosis on that day?
You don't make that diagnosis based on one emergency room visit.
Okay. So as you admitted Maya into the patient intensive care unit, you did that, correct?
Sorry?
She was admitted into the patient intensive care in pediatric intensive care unit?
Yes.
Okay. Who did you discuss her case with?
Dr. Laura Vose.
Dr. Vose. Okay. What did you relay about Maya's condition?
I relayed to her the child's presentation. And that the mother was demanding 1,500 milligrams of ketamine, and that I was unable to provide that service to the child in the emergency department, and that the child was going to need to be admitted to the ICU in order to provide such high doses of ketamine, if that was in fact what the child needed.
Okay. And again, none of this Munchausen by proxy discussion is reflected in your note, is that correct?
Again, we don't make that diagnosis in the emergency department.
Since of a protocol at the hospital to address Munchausen syndrome by proxy, or at least a protocol that was inclusive of the nursing department, what was your next step?
I didn't make that diagnosis in the emergency department, and therefore I had no reason to start any protocol.
You had a concern about Munchausen by proxy?
As I did for multiple other things.
But you took no further steps in pursuing that diagnosis, is that correct?
Again, I don't make the diagnosis of Munchausen's by proxy in the emergency department.
I'm not asking you to make the diagnosis. I'm asking you, in allowing others to make the diagnosis, did you pursue any additional steps to inform them, other than talking with Dr. Bose?
No.
The book referred to as a child protection team medical director. Are you aware of a child protection team medical director within the hospital?
We don't have a child protection team director within the hospital. There is a child protection team physician for the county of Pinellas who serves as the consultant for the hospital as well as for every hospital in the county.
Did you reach out to that person?
No.
Who would that be?
Sally Smith.
Do you know Sally Smith?
Yes, I do.
How do you know Sally Smith?
I worked with her years ago when I was the medical director for Hillsborough County.
And was she at that time the medical director in Pinellas County?
Yes, she was. She was a co-director with Mark Morris.
So you've worked closely with her in the past, is that correct?
I wouldn't say closely, but we were directors at the same time in different counties.
Okay. Do you count her as a friend?
No.
Do you consider Munchausen by proxy to be a form of child abuse?
It is a form of child abuse.
After you spoke with Dr. Vos, did you follow Maya's case?
No, I did not.
That was your last involvement with the case?
Yes, it was.
Were you made aware that a report of Munchausen by proxy was made?
No.
Never?
No.
When is the first you learned that the Kowalskis, and specifically Beata, were alleged to have abused their daughter Maya?
I can't remember the exact time that I was told. It was months later.
Was Maya still in the hospital when you were told?
I really don't know.
At this time, did you have any leadership position in the pediatric unit?
What time?
The time of Maya's admission, 2016.
What pediatric unit?
Well, I see here on your CV you were the vice chairman of the Division of Pediatric Emergency Medicine.
Right.
Can you please detail your roles and responsibilities in that?
I'm responsible for ensuring that the pathways that we have in place are complied with, that I'm responsible for schedules, for patient complaints, review of medical records to make sure that that things are done appropriately in the unit.
Describe the term pathways for me.
Pathways are guidelines that the hospital has come up with, that we come up as multidisciplinary teams in order to make sure that the guidelines and evidence-based medicine treatment in place or to comply with the latest things that we're supposed to be doing.
Okay.
For different diagnoses. And
would you agree that protocol would be a synonym of pathway?
It's similar. It's not the same, but it's similar, yeah.
Or perhaps if you had some sort of standard operating procedure within which to address Munchausen by proxy, you would refer to it as a pathway at Johns Hopkins, is that correct?
If it's written in the format that we have, yes.
Sure. But as you sat as the vice chair in 2016, there was no pathway or any other format for addressing Munchausen by proxy, correct?
Not in the emergency department.
Correct. All right. And as the vice chair, you're generally familiar with the training and experience of the other pediatric physicians in that department?
Generally, yes.
Okay. Anyone else in that department that's previously served as a medical director of Hillsborough County for the child protection team?
No.
No. How many cases do you estimate you saw of child abuse during those 5 years?
In Hillsborough?
Correct.
I don't have a number to give you.
North of 100?
Probably.
Okay. More than 500?
I don't know. Probably somewhere in that range.
Okay. Are you aware of anyone within your department that has seen as many cases as you?
As many
cases of child abuse?
No.
And in the absence of a protocol, you were not consulted further?
No, I wasn't.
Despite your extensive experience? And the first time you became aware was months later, and you're not sure whether that was during Maya's admission or afterwards.
Yes, I can tell you the situation where I was informed about it.
Please do.
I was informed that by a resident who was talking to another resident that Maya's mother had committed suicide, at which point I questioned what had happened, and that's when I found out.
Mm-hmm. And you don't recall if... Do you recall how long after Beata's suicide that would have been?
I don't know.
Okay. What was your reaction?
I was surprised.
You were surprised by Beata's suicide?
Yes.
Did you interact with Beata during that ER visit?
Yes.
And what was your impression of her?
She was a very... she came in very angry, demanding, shouting at her husband, very insistent on higher doses of ketamine. She wouldn't let her husband touch her child. She wouldn't let me do anything without giving more and more medication to her child.
Would she let anyone touch her child?
No. Well, she let the nurses draw blood. She didn't have a problem with that.
Okay. She resisted a CT scan, is that correct?
Yes, she did.
And she resisted an ultrasound, is that correct?
Well, let me correct that.
Okay.
She resisted the ultrasound unless I would give her more ketamine.
Okay.
She resisted the CT scan unless I gave her 1,500 milligrams of ketamine.
Right. And not being an anesthesiologist or a pain management specialist, you didn't feel comfortable administering that ketamine in the ER, or you weren't allowed to, and so you admitted her to the intensive care unit. Is that correct?
Well, the doses that we're allowed to give in the emergency department are in the 0.5 to 4 milligrams per kilo range, mm-hmm. and the amount that she wanted to give was... in the 45 to 50 milligrams per kilo range, which was absurd and not something that we are trained to or allowed to give in the emergency department.
Right. Who had been administering that ketamine to Maya previously?
To my knowledge and all that I had, the only information I had was that it was a Dr. Hanna in Clearwater.
Did you speak with Dr. Hanna?
I called his office to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
He was not available.
Okay.
I spoke with a nurse type person. I don't know if it was a nurse practitioner or a nurse, but I spoke with a nurse.
Okay.
Who informed me of what their treatment had been.
Okay. And hearing that another doctor had been prescribing that treatment, your opinion still was that the level of ketamine being requested was absurd, to use your phrase?
Yes.
Okay. Did you consult with any other doctors?
Yes. I called anesthesia.
Dr. Vose?
No. Dr. Vose is ICU.
Okay. I'm sorry. Who is in anesthesia?
I don't have a name. But
okay.
I spoke with the anesthesiologist on call, and I spoke with the ICU.
Okay. Did you speak with anyone else outside the hospital besides Dr. Hanna's staff?
No.
Did you speak with Dr. Wassenaar?
No.
If you turn to page 2 of your note, which we marked as Exhibit 3, you see a quarter of the way down, primary care physician?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Dr. Wassenaar's name is listed there?
Yes.
And his contact information is readily available?
Yes.
But you didn't reach out to him?
No.
Okay. Do you know how long Maya had been suffering from CRPS at this point?
No. Although the father did tell me that the diagnosis was made a year and a half prior to her presentation.
Okay. Based upon my review of the record, it looks as if the report was made later that evening.
Okay.
You remained unaware of that.
I didn't make the report.
And you weren't aware that a report was made?
No, I wasn't.
Right. Did you consult with any psychologist?
No.
Despite the concern for psychogenic diagnosis, you did not consult with any psychologist?
It's not our habit to consult psychologists in the emergency department.
Okay. Is it your understanding that that would be the intensive care unit's responsibility?
That is an inpatient consult. It's something that is not urgent.
Okay. after she was admitted to the PICU, she was considered an inpatient?
Yes.
Okay. So at that point, psychological consult would have been proper?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know if one was performed?
No.
Okay. How would you classify your level of knowledge of CRPS?
I think, I don't know what kind of scale you're using.
Aware, familiar, expert?
Aware.
Aware. If you were going to seek an outside opinion on a pediatric CRPS case, who would you go to in the state of Florida?
I don't have a specific name because I've not needed to. I usually refer to TGH. There's a CRPS clinic there, but I don't know the names of the people who work there.
Your testimony was you did not consult with anyone outside of the hospital other than Dr. Hanna's staff, is that correct?
Outside the hospital, no. I contacted the pain management physician who was giving that kind of dosage to her in order to clarify exactly what the child was receiving.
And you do refer to Dr. Hanna's staff, correct?
Yes, yes.
And they confirmed that they had previously provided her on the day prior 1,500 milligrams, is that correct?
Well, actually, I think the dose was 1,250 milligrams.
Okay.
With 15 milligrams of 2% lidocaine, 1,750 milligrams of max sulfate, and 4 milligrams of Versed.
Okay. So, Beata's request wasn't out of line with the previous day's dosage, was it?
It was actually higher. It was 1,500.
Right. How much higher is that?
250 milligrams.
Is that significant?
In a child who weighs 30 kilos, yes.
Had Beata asked for 1,250 milligrams, would you have felt that was not an absurd request?
You have to understand that the dose, the way that we give ketamine in the emergency department is mm-hmm. different than the way she receives it in the pain management clinic.
Okay.
In the emergency department, we give it in a bolus form. So we push.
Okay.
Okay. Pain management gives it as an infusion, as a continuous infusion over hours.
Okay.
Okay. We don't have the nursing or the staff to monitor a child for that period of time in the emergency department. Nurses are not allowed to give ketamine in the state of Florida in the emergency department. Mm-hmm. Okay. So giving her 1,500 milligrams as a bolus is absurd.
Okay. The decision to admit Maya was made due to this staffing concern and inability to administer the ketamine dose as requested?
Among other things, yes.
Oh, okay, please detail the other things.
The fact that she would need to be monitored,
okay.
The fact that she needed a pain management specialist to be supervising this as well as the ICU.
Okay. Who did you speak with within the hospital in pain management?
I spoke with the anesthesiologist who was on call, and then he was going to, or she, I don't remember, was going to talk to the pain management group. I can read it to you if you want.
That'd be fun.
It says, I discussed the dosage with anesthesia, who stated that they would, it says given, but it's give more if needed after discussion with the pain management doctors and evaluation of patient on the floor.
Can you give us three names that you deal with most often in anesthesiology?
Dr. Elliott, I think it's Dr. Patel, and there's Dr. Drozhonin.
Can you spell that, if not?
Drozhinin.
Okay. Those are the anesthesiologists you confer with most regularly?
Those are usually the people on call when I call to
okay.
speak to somebody.
Okay. So the decision to, I'll make sure we get this right. The decision to admit Maya into the intensive care unit was due to a concern about the inability in the ER to administer ketamine via an infusion.
Correct.
And your understanding was, after talking with Dr. Vos and whoever you spoke with in anesthesia, that they would further consider whether that dosage was appropriate?
They would further consider the management of pain in this child.
Okay.
not necessarily specifically as it related to the dosage, but to control this child's pain
okay.
in an adequate fashion.
Okay. And so Beata's concern was controlling Maya's pain. Is that correct?
Her concern was that I comply with the dosage of ketamine and that I actually give her the medication that she felt was necessary for the treatment of her child at that time.
And when you explained to her that you'd have to admit her to the intensive care unit for that to be administered, did she resist that?
She initially wanted me to get anesthesia to come to the emergency department, but I was unable to do so. And after I told her that it would have to be in the ICU and that I was not willing to give any further doses of ketamine, then she complied with that.
Okay. So she was in a bit of a rush to have ketamine administered.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with the wording in okay. a rush. I think she definitely wanted to push her opinion of how this child's pain should be managed.
Okay.
Immediately.
Right. But after it was explained to her that could not be done in the emergency department, she understood that message.
Unwillingly.
Unwillingly?
Yes.
Well, I thought your earlier testimony was that she did not resist admission to the intensive care unit.
Didn't have an option because I was refusing to administer any further doses.
Right. She wanted her daughter comforted sooner rather than later.
No, she wanted her daughter to receive 1,500 milligrams of ketamine, which I was not willing to do in the emergency department.
Right, and when you explained to her that could only happen in the intensive care unit, she allowed her daughter to be admitted.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to saying no.
Her goal was to get ketamine into this child?
Mm-hmm. Can that be understood as a goal of comforting her daughter?
I think there are many ways to comfort a child besides administering ketamine.
Where do you think she got the idea for 1,500 milligrams of ketamine?
I have no idea.
Is 1,250 milligrams in the range of 1,500 milligrams?
If you go by milligrams per kilograms, it's an excessive dose.
So had she asked for, again, had she asked for 1,250, you would have been okay with that request?
No, I would not.
Okay. After speaking with Dr. Hanna's office, you still maintain that 1,250 was an absurd dose.
It was.
Okay. And that was based on your consult with anesthesiology?
No, that was based on my experience with working with ketamine in the emergency department and the fact that we give bolus doses and we do not exceed doses of about 4 milligrams per kilo in the ER.
Right. But once the difference between a bolus dose and an infusion was explained to Beata, she allowed her daughter to be admitted to the intensive care unit.
I don't recall having that conversation with her about bolus versus infusion.
Oh, you didn't explain to her that the problem was it would be a bolus dose and not an infusion.
I did not have that. I don't recall having that
okay.
discussion with her.
So she remained unaware that your inability to administer that ketamine in the ER was because of the type of administration, bolus versus infusion.
She did not ask for an infusion. She asked for 1,500 milligrams of ketamine.
Did she ask for it in bolus form?
She didn't ask for infusion.
She didn't specify. Previously, Maya had been treated with infusion.
I don't know. I don't know what they did in Mexico. I don't know what Dr. Hanna did.
The day prior.
Prior to that, I don't know. All I know is what I was given by a nurse in his office.
And the day prior, she received it via infusion. That was your testimony.
And the infusion was over 4 hours, apparently.
Okay. So it'd be reasonable to understand that Bial would be asking for similar treatment as the day prior.
I don't know if she ever got it in a bolus
okay.
form.
And it was never explained to her that it was bolus versus infusion.
She didn't ask me, and I didn't even know what she was getting at that
okay.
time.
Did you ever speak with Dr. Smith about the case?
No, I did not.
And to this day, you have not spoken with her about the case?
No, I haven't.
Your concern with on that October day was over the amount of ketamine requested, is that correct?
My concern was for the safety of the child. You don't want to give something to the child to cause any more problems.
Right.
So I couldn't comply with what the mom was requesting under in the emergency department. And the child needed further diagnostic testing to figure out why she had the abdominal pain. The mother was refusing to allow me to do any tests aside from the blood work and the urine unless I gave the ketamine. So I had to admit the child so that this could be done in a controlled fashion.
Why was the mother refusing?
Because every test that I ordered, the ultrasound, the CAT scan, she wanted mega doses of ketamine before I could do it, and I was not going to do it. I couldn't do it.
And was your read that that was born of her concern for her daughter's pain?
I don't know why she was so insistent that we had to do, because I was giving ketamine. I did give the child Versed. I just didn't give the amount that she wanted.
Did you give ketamine or Versed prior to the blood draw you mentioned earlier?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So only after
the... Well, actually, I'm sorry. Can I take that back?
Sure.
So we gave it IV, so she had to have had the blood draw.
So you gave ketamine and Versed via IV?
Correct.
So the blood was drawn previously?
It was... The blood was drawn at the time when the IV was placed.
So your concern was over the level of ketamine being requested. Did you have concern about the 1,250 milligrams that was administered the day prior?
That dose seemed excessive to me, but I'm not a specialist in pain management, which is why, A, I called to verify the dose. B, I wasn't sure if the mother even knew what she was talking about. I couldn't know. I had to find out exactly what she was talking about. And then I wanted to talk to the physician to see what they were doing.
Right.
And there was nobody there but some nurse.
And after confirming the dose of 1,250 milligrams, you still maintain that that was absurd, is that correct?
I do.
Did you attempt to verify whether being under general anesthesia to treat CRPS is appropriate?
I called our anesthesiologist because I'm not a pain medication specialist. Yes, I did call what was available to me at the time.
And what did they say about that?
They said that they would review it and decide what would be appropriate dosing for this child.
I have to go back to this word erratically. You said the mother was behaving erratically. I need to understand that. What was erratic about her behavior?
Her presentation, the way that she started shouting at the father, telling him not to touch her child, demanding the ketamine over and over again, not allowing me to do any testing, considering they were there for abdominal pain.
Are any of those things you just listed not explained by a daughter who's in excruciating pain?
What, telling your husband not to touch your child?
Why would you ask people not to touch your child?
I don't know. Why would you?
Well, one possibility is they're in extreme pain. Would you agree?
I think touching your child is a comforting measure. It's a reflex.
It's a reflex by the parents?
Most of the time, yeah.
Okay. So what was erratic about her behavior?
She was belligerent, demanding. She was shouting at her husband. She was not open to any conversation, or nothing was negotiable but her way. She was not concerned about the child's medical condition. If she had presented there for abdominal pain, you would want some tests to be done to find out why the child has abdominal pain. That was not her concern. Her concern was merely administering ketamine over and over and over and more and more and more.
Her objection to these tests was based on physical contact, correct?
She had no problem with blood being drawn.
Was the mother there for that?
No, I don't know. I don't remember.
Right. So as far as you're aware, when the mother was around, she resisted all physical contact.
Yes. She refused the blood pressure cuff.
She did allow you to admit the daughter to the intensive care unit after explaining you couldn't administer the ketamine, correct?
It was not negotiable to get an ultrasound on this child. It was not negotiable to get a CAT scan on this child. It was not negotiable to do anything to this child other than administer her ketamine.
And admit her to the PICU.
Because that was the only way she was going to get it.
Your total interaction with the Kowalskis lasted how long?
The time they were in the hospital, in the ER.
And based on your note, my best read is that it was less than 2 hours. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And they'd been dealing with this condition for a year and a half?
Yes.
But you made the determination that the mother was acting improperly and erratically?
She was.
You, however, didn't feel it rose to the level to report it to the abuse hotline.
We have children that come to the emergency department with all kinds of parents, and we have to deal with it. People have all kinds of mental health problems. If I had to report every person that has a mental health problem to the abuse hotline, I think Florida's hotline wouldn't be able to handle it.
Who had a mental health problem?
When I mentioned that her behavior was out of the norm for what you see in the, you know, in taking care of a child with chronic pain on any level, it doesn't raise to the level of having to report her to the abuse hotline.
Okay, you dealt with parents who had been similarly pushy?
I have dealt with many pushy parents. I've never had them refuse any tests unless I give them the medication in the dosage and in the way that they want.
How many pushy parents have you dealt with in the ER in the context of CRPS?
Actually, the CRPS parents are usually they're usually worn down.
Okay. I have to tie up. You said someone had mental issues. Who had mental issues?
I said that this, when you mentioned reporting her, mm-hmm. if a person is being erratic, mm-hmm. I didn't make a diagnosis in this patient to the extent of having to report her to the Department of Children and Families. We get people who behave in all kinds of ways in the ER. I don't go reporting all of them to the Department of Children and Families.
And you're aware of your statutory requirement to report reasonable suspicions of child abuse.
Right.
Because you have extensive experience in that area. Mm-hmm. And it didn't rise to that level.
Not based on a two-hour encounter with a mother.
So she might have been pushy and belligerent, but not to the level that would require a hotline call.
No.
That concludes the presentation of Dr. Bahar Posey.
Okay. Members of the jury, let's go ahead and take a break. Let's try to keep it to a 10-minute break. Do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do any investigation and receive no information. Okay? Have a good break.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them, while everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA. Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited. Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.